Democrat proposed bill HR 6666.
That means the full power and strength of the military.
An average man with an average life, put on my mask to drive. Hell, I'm just being nice. They won't leave me alone, even in my safe space home. Voice at my door says, you're in the COVID zone, and the contact tracers, they're always watching me. Goodbye to privacy.
You're listening to Fakeologist Audio, a periodic audio where I explore the world of media fakery. You can find my blog at fakeologist.com, where you'll find all the links to the live stream and audio archives. You will also find links to my sublogs, forums, email, PayPal, Twitter, and YouTube. We now use Discord for all our interactive audio and text. To join in on any live conversation, go to our main page and connect to the Discord server on the right, or visit bit.ly/fakechat. Now, here's your host, the Fakeologist, Aberrato.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, no, I won't comply with Nancy.
That is Media Bear. Media Bear has a new track. It is called We're Watching. And, of course, it's about the contact tracing. Those are two words you would never put together 6 months ago. Today is June 21st, year of our Lord 2020. It's very important on these audio podcasts to give the date, because right now I'm actually listening to Marcus Allen's old audios from 2008. And it's really great because he talks about a lot of stuff that's totally relevant today. And as you know, Marcus is going to be appearing on this broadcast once a month. Once a week is too much for him, which is actually too much for everybody, because I want to get other people on. But listening to old broadcasts and then looking at some of the websites he mentions, he's very good at mentioning websites. Some of them are still alive. And he interviewed a guest named Dr. Vander something. And I just posted that on fakeologist.com/blog. And it's great because I got to look up the guest website and find out something quite stunning about the guest 12 years later here in 2020. So anyway, the point is that if you are listening to this podcast in the future, which I hope you are, one of you or two of you are, I think it'd be fascinating because you're going to get a snapshot into 2020, which has got to be one of the most dramatic years ever in terms of change. And we're also in the biggest psyop of all times, and we are living it live, where 9/11 came and went. We are deep in the corona change era, the corona vortex, the coronavirus hoax, like I call it. And anyway, I'm speaking to myself, if I'm, say, going to be around, say, in 2050, I would be very interested to go back if I was, say, a young person in 2050 to hear what people were talking about in 2020. So put this one in the vault. All my audios are free. Anyone can get at them. Please share them, repost them. There's no copyright. All I ask is if you do listen to this audio and you like it, send me an email at ima@fakeologist.com. Hit me up at PayPal. And I made the decision based on one person's feedback that I will open up a P.O. box so you can send me old-fashioned dirty cash, no checks, because I'm not going to open up, a company account, and I don't want you sending it to my corporate name. So I'll just accept small donations of cash if that's what you would like to do, which that way PayPal won't get their 20% and Patreon won't get their 20%, but I'm going to do that just for the few people, and that way you can be totally anonymous, no return address, nothing, and I'll set that up at a small cost. And if anyone wants to if anyone remembers how to lick a stamp and address an envelope, because I've talked to lots of people that are 20 or 25 and under, and those kind of things, those supplies, they're just not familiar with them. They can go get the mail, but I don't think any of them has ever done a mass mailing of the physical kind. Anyway, tonight, I'm going to try and do this Sunday show regularly if I can, and talk for an hour or so, which is usually most people's podcast limit for as much as they can take in terms of listening. But if we go over, that's fine. Today I reached out to someone named Lynn, who you may have heard on many podcasts that you and I are familiar with. And Lynn is a very intelligent caller, and I always love listening to Lynn speak, whether it be with Chris from Hoaxbusters Call, wherever he is, and maybe a couple other shows that I can't remember right now, but I always thought this person was very intelligent, and I found Lynn on a Facebook page. I can't remember. Well, actually, maybe it's because Lynn mentioned it on the last call that I think she was on, which may have been the Hoaxbusters Call. So Lynn is on Facebook. Lynn, I'm going to read a bit of her Facebook profile right now. She is from Baltimore, Maryland. She studied at the University of Maryland and the Whiting School of Engineering at Johns Hopkins. Woo! So this person is very intelligent, and this person is very with it when it comes to conspiracy. And if you go to her Facebook page that I link to on fakeologist.com/blog, you can click to it and get her postings. And I found tons of the postings, and I've lifted a few and put them on fakeologist.com. So on the old-fashioned POTS, plain old telephone system, is Lynn Ertel. Hi, Lynn.
Hey, you know, I try to boost Fakeologist in my timeline as much as possible and refer people to it. So,
thank you. And actually, when I did look at your timeline and saw the boosting, I thought, for sure, I got to reach out and see if you'll come on. So, fantastic.
Both Fakeologist and Hoaxbusters arrived at a time when, first of all, I was part of the original 9/11 truth movement in the sense that I knew it was an inside job on the day it happened and told everybody who would listen to me and got quite a bit of blowback from it.
Yeah.
At that point, I had not even seen the videos of the controlled demolitions, which I know Simon Schacht believes were fabricated anyway, although I had purchased a copy of, subsequently purchased a video that won an award at a film festival. It was produced by another one of the original 9/11 truthers named Rick Siegel. It was called 9/11 Eyewitness, and then he subsequently distributed an expanded version of that called 9/11 Raw. I purchased 50 copies of it and handed out. I basically have two or three left now, but it was something where I thought, here it is. He set up a camera, Rick Siegel, across the river in Hoboken, New Jersey. He claimed that he actually worked in the World Trade Center, and I guess he had gone into work and been turned away and went back home and went back across the one way or another. He had set up a camera there in Hoboken, and he took these videos. Now, I don't know if they're real or not, because Clues Forum seems to think that anything that they don't vet isn't authentic. But I knew all of these original 9/11 truthers because, as I say, on the day it happened, and I knew it was an inside job because of the Pentagon hit.
Uh-huh.
I was working as a consultant. I'm retired now, 69 years old. I did software engineering in corporate America for like more than 30 years. And at the time, I was working on the billing system at the Baltimore Gas and Electric Company and drove into work as usual and was listening, as most people were in those days, to Howard Stern. And that's when he described the first hit. He said, it looks like maybe a small plane has crashed into the World Trade Center. And I thought, that's interesting. By the time I got to work, the office building in which I worked had been evacuated, so I couldn't get in there. So I went down the street and around the corner, down Baltimore Street, to a favorite barista spot called Java Joe's, where I knew all the young people that worked there and drank their coffee and ate their pastries and all that. And I sat there out. It was a beautiful day. I mean, that it was just the weather was so perfect that morning. And I was sitting outside drinking my coffee. And one of the baristas, knowing how I was following this, ran out and said, a plane just hit. Oh, no, I said a truck bomb went off at the Pentagon. They've announced a truck bomb. And on the news, they said a truck bomb just went off on the Pentagon. And I sat up right away. I said, what? Yeah, I said, well, keep me posted. So the barista went back inside, came out about 10 minutes later, and said, no, they're saying it was a plane. They're saying a Boeing commercial jet hit the west wall of the Pentagon. I jumped up. I said, that's impossible. I said, that's impossible. You're sure you're not talking about, you know, maybe a Soviet MiG, maybe a missile, but not a big, fat Boeing commercial jet. Because I knew of the existence of this mysterious organization called NORAD, North American Aerospace Defense Command, which apparently everybody conveniently forgot existed, even though they track Santa Claus across the skies every Christmas. So I jumped up right away. I said, that's impossible. I said, that's got to be an inside job. Because how could you evade NORAD? Subsequently, when I went home that evening and looked at the watched the accounts on the news, they claim that this plane, this was the mythical Flight 77, had been hijacked somewhere near the. It had left D.C., I guess from Reagan Airport. I don't think it was Dulles. It was Reagan, right, they claimed.
Yeah.
And was allegedly hijacked over the Ohio-Kentucky border, turned around. They actually showed the flight path in the newspapers the next day. They published a map. And claimed that this plane hijacked near the Ohio-Kentucky border, flew across several state lines over dams, bridges, highways, cities, nuclear power plants, and scored a perfect direct hit on the Pentagon. So I knew from the word go this was impossible without a NORAD stand down. It had to be an inside job, and I tried to tell everybody who would listen. I was stunned. I was stunned at people's reaction. At one point, I even called into a local call-in radio show, public radio here in Baltimore, and expressed this view and was told, oh, no, our air defenses were never looking for a domestic flight to do this. All their attention was focused on international flights outside of the United States, which, of course, is obvious bullshit. Mm-hmm. If a plane is hijacked in United States airspace, it doesn't matter whether it was an international flight or a domestic flight. NORAD's job is to scramble immediately. Of course, we know there are airfields between here and the Ohio-Kentucky border. You've got Andrews Air Force Base. On that particular morning, we all knew that the president was down there in Sarasota reading My Pet Goat.
Yeah.
School children.
Yeah.
And on any given day, if the president flies on Air Force One, if the Pope arrives, if Tony Blair flew in, there would always be at least two combat-ready squadrons on the ground at Andrews Air Force Base to scramble immediately.
Right.
To protect the security of these flights. So. And then, of course, there's Bowling Air Force Base. There are who knows how many airfields there are and Air National Guard bases there are between the Ohio-Kentucky border and Washington, D.C. But one way or another, I knew from the Pentagon hit alone that this was bullshit. Oh, I better watch that word shit because Marcus Allen kicked me out of his chat room about 10 years ago for using that word. Yeah, because he said – I inadvertently, I think it was the shit word. I don't think it was the F-U-C-K word. And he got very angry and said, my kids are using this chat room, and he kicked me out.
Wow.
Because I wasn't a big fan of Marcus Allen anyway because I despise sales and marketing. There's nothing, I think it's one of the most despicable, parasitic businesses you can be in.
Mm-hmm.
You, on the other hand, you do something essential. You do logistics.
Yeah.
Trucking. I couldn't survive without that.
Yeah.
But the last thing in the world I want when I hang up this phone is for it to ring so I can get another fucking robocall. sales and web marketing assholes. and I'll never know if Marcus Allen has helped them set that up. Maybe not. I don't want to judge him too harshly.
Yeah.
I also got kicked out of Clues for him because of being technologically backward.
Oh, okay.
One of the fake victims on Flight 93, who went by the name of Honor Elizabeth Wainio, W-A-I-N-I-O, and I think you've seen the photoshopped images of her.
Okay.
That I have to, I do have to thank the Vix Project for posting this.
Yeah, Hoi Polloi.
Yeah, and oh, Hoi Polloi kicked me out of there because what happened was there's a bar.
Yeah.
There's a tavern here in South Baltimore. I don't know if it's even still in business anymore, called the Rope Walk Tavern.
Okay.
And they're big right-wing Republican boosters. They even had a shrine there to Ronald Reagan. It was the most ridiculous thing I'd ever seen. But every year after 9/11, or shortly after, there was a scholarship fund established in the name of Honor Elizabeth Wainio. And her sister was a promoter of this. Her sister even displayed a tattoo on her wrist that said Honor. And, you know, that may be posted on Clues Forum as well. But I said, hey, you know, they're getting ready to have this event down at the Rope Walk Tavern. I'm going to go and cover it. And no one suggested that I should go there and take pictures or take video. Not only that, I have a cheap flip phone. I have an old cheap flip phone. I worked on computer keyboards for 30 years. I don't particularly want to carry around a fancy handheld device. I guess this would have been about 2010 or 20. I guess it's been 2011 this happened. And it never occurred to me to take pictures there. Of course, if I had uploaded pictures to the Clues Forum, who would have? They still could have accused me of faking the pictures. But I basically described what happened. I went there. What I did was I printed out on leaflets the images of these photoshopped pictures of Honor Elizabeth Wainio, allegedly one of the martyrs of Flight 93, and started handing them out there and basically, you know, out right out in front of the Rope Walk Tavern. And they called the police on me, and the cops showed up. I said, I'm not doing anything illegal here, but they basically forced me out of there. So when I got home, I got back into Clues for them. I said, hey, here's what happened. I described exactly what happened. And immediately, Hoi Polloi and everybody else was jumping down my throat because I didn't produce pictures, because I didn't have anything to upload to Clues for him to prove this, that I'd gone there and I'd done this. I would say about 6 weeks later, I was subject to what they call a federal security suitability check at Social Security Complex in Woodlawn, Maryland, where I worked. At that point, I was an employee of Lockheed Martin. And this is an amazing thing, too, because I was a real subversive in the 60s. I was on the National Interim Committee of Students for a Democratic Society. I got arrested any number of times. Very big into the anti-Vietnam War movement, which I know John LeBon is convinced was a hoax. And that just tells me he really didn't spend a lot of time in the Vietnamese countryside, because there's not a family there that didn't suffer some casualty from the Vietnam War. They bombed the fuck out of the place for about, you know, for I guess 5 or 6 years. I remember the bombing of Haiphong Harbor, and it sank a Swedish ship. It was a big deal. But that's another issue to take up with John LeBon, how much of war is a hoax and how much of it is the destruction of innocent life through aerial bombing.
Right.
I would never have gotten a security clearance to save my life, really. The FBI came to my parents' house back in 1969, 1970. I got arrested at anti-war demonstrations. I brought a couple busloads of New York City college students to New Haven to keep Bobby Seale from being railroaded up there. That would have been May of 1970. That was about a week before Kent. That was the weekend of Kent State, as a matter of fact. Very exciting time.
Mm-hmm.
But and I dropped out of college and all kinds of things. And then I went back and I got into computers. I became a computer operator, pulling printouts out of a printer, bursting them and putting them in a bin. And from that, they offered me an opportunity to become a tape operator on the other side of the glass wall, working on the very ancient IBM 36158, which then became the 37168. under that time MVS, which was the cutting edge operating system. But from there, I went on to become a systems operator. And then I went back to college to study computer science, got my degree at the University of Maryland, and went on to Johns Hopkins University's Whiting School of Engineering, the Applied Physics Lab, where I spent a lot of time studying artificial intelligence, none of which I was able really to apply very much on the job, although I did work on some really interesting linear models for CSX, very large railroad.
Yeah, I've heard of CSX, yeah.
And, but I was, you know, I had professors at both UMBC, University of Maryland, and Hopkins say, oh, you should come over to NSA. You could join their intern program and, you know, study during the day. And it kind of broke my heart to tell them, professor, there's no way in hell I'm going to get a security clearance to work at NSA. I'm a bona fide subversive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, late in my career, the work started to dry up here in Baltimore. CSX moved their whole data processing operation to Jacksonville, Florida. And there wasn't a whole lot of opportunity. I had, for about 10 years, I had worked for a small mom-and-pop software firm. They typically employed about 60 people, but with Y2K coming along, there was money to be made.
Mm-hmm.
So I had left CSX to go to work for them on the Y2K thing about 98. And they said, well, we have an opportunity over here to work. You will be subcontracted to Lockheed Martin on their records management program over there at the Social Security complex in Woodlawn. I thought at that point I'd be, as soon as they did a background, because it requires a public trust clearance, which is the lowest security clearance you can get. And at the time, my boss, who was a Lockheed Martin guy, by the name of Assad Hussein, an Englishman, wonderful guy, rode a motorcycle, drank beer, wore leather jackets, and he liked me. He said, you know, you do great work. Don't worry about this. I'll get you. It's only a public trust clearance. We'll get it for you. What you're working for me. And he did. I guess about 2 years later, Assad Hussein, young guy with a wife and two kids, stepped off a curve on Edmondson Avenue in Baltimore and, I'm told, was hit by a car.
Oh, great.
We were all told that. We even had a memorial service for him at work where the family showed up. And one of the kids, his son, actually played. He said, now I'm going to play one of my father's favorite tunes. And he played, I think it was Pink Floyd's Money. He played a Pink Floyd number on the guitar and sang.
Right.
For all I know, Assad Hussein's death was faked. I would never have thought that at the time, but maybe it was. I don't know.
Yeah. He just assumed a new identity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, perhaps. Contrary to expectation, though, here I had this public trust clearance. Now, as I say, and that was beginning about 2006, 2007. And like I say, several weeks after this incident at the Rope Walk Tavern, where I had confronted them about these photoshopped images of Honor Elizabeth Wynio, Flight 93 victim, all of a sudden, I was called in and said, well, we're running the routine, they call it a suitability review. And they had a contractor running this suitability review by the name of ISIS, Internet Security Investigative Systems. Internet Security Investigative Services. I don't even know if they're in business anymore. I was on a team of about 35 programmers, brilliant people, most of whom were from India, one of whom was from mainland China, another one was from Nigeria. On the entire team of about 35 people, only about three or four of us were actually Americans, you know, native-born Americans. And, of course, we were the ones who were subjected to this security suitability check. And at that point, I lost my job. Of course, I was 61 years old. I said, well, to hell with it. I'm going to wait another year and collect Social Security, and I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had been working long hours, 16-hour days, you know, rushing to get projects done. But it was a great, I have to say, I got to be honest about this. Corporate America was extraordinarily generous to me. And I was, you know, I was talking about 9/11 to people. It was kind of warned by bosses, hey, you know, cool that. Don't be talking about that around here. And so,
So do you think that's why you lost your clearance?
I don't know. I can't prove it. I can't. But at that point, and you know, the tragedy is they were about to put in a brand new system.
Yeah.
I did mostly testing. And without me there, the project had to be set back. Who knows? It probably cost them $1 million. I mean, who knows?
Yeah.
There was definitely money lost on this. But at that point, I was just over it anyway. And not so much because of the job. I liked work. I hated the drive. I got to tell you, the most stressful thing in my working career was the morning and evening drive.
Yeah.
I had a few bastard bosses, but I get along with people pretty good. It's amazing how well you can do in corporate America, or could, I don't know about now, just by producing. And I produced.
Yeah.
I moved deadlines ahead, everything else. So I got away with a lot more than I should. I'm getting too personal about this
yeah.
now. But
you sent me a video of you doing martial arts. I'll just play a little.
Is that an interruption we got? I just heard a noise over the line.
Did you hear?
Hello?
Hi. I was just playing your video. Did you hear the video? That was just me blasting your... That was your video. You are one tough woman martial artist. And, wow, you can really... are you doing that in your at age 69 still? Or is that a video?
Yes.
Wow,
yes.
Amazing. So
yes.
you are a tough woman.
I do the kickboxing as well.
Wow.
It's the closest thing to religion in my life is the martial arts.
Wow.
It really kept me.
Did you win that match of the video you sent me? Because at the end you cut it off.
No, I lost.
Okay. I don't really know how it scores, but it looked pretty even to me.
I took her back in the beginning, and I was winning on points, but she got out.
Right.
I don't win too many of them. Now, when the gym over the hill from me, I had been training at probably one of the best gyms on planet Earth with a protege of the Gracies from Brazil. I think you're familiar with Gracies.
No, I don't know anything about martial arts.
Well, this is a mixed martial arts gym, and as you know, under the current lockdown here in Maryland, and the lockdown's been pretty strict here in Maryland from this fascist Governor Hogan.
Yeah.
All kinds of rules have been issued now. So when I go back there, I'll probably be doing more kickboxing than jiu-jitsu because there's all kinds of requirements. They're not even – I mean, this is close contact stuff. When you do jiu-jitsu, you roll on the mat. It's all sweaty, you know. So they're not going to let people do that right away.
Yeah.
But the kickboxing, they may have opened up more. And I've made it clear over there, I'm real, real angry and real aggressive now because of this lockdown.
I'm sure, yeah. You probably have lots to say. Well, that's why I wanted to talk to you. So you are a 9/11, you were in the 9/11 movement, and you're familiar with Marcus. You've been on Clues Forum.
Oh, my gosh, I could talk about Nico Haupt. I could talk about Rosalie Grable. I could talk about, as far as I'm concerned, the original 9/11 truther and no-planer, Gerard Holmgren, who we were told died of cancer.
Yeah.
I kind of had a falling out with Holmgren. It should be interesting from your point of view because at a certain point, you know, and you know Holmgren was probably the original no-planer. He was an Australian.
Right. What year did he start saying that? What year did that concept of no-planing start? 2005? Four?
Yeah, right about 2005. Yeah, and that was because, let me tell you how I discovered it. Because by that time, I had seen the videos of the demolitions, which, as I say, Sam and Shaq and Sis are all fake. But
I agree. I agree with that.
And I had seen Building 7, which is a classic Vegas-style, you know, demolition.
Yeah.
And it's a no-brainer. And I thought, well, that's it now. People are going to see this. No. I mean, so what are... as far as the TV fakery, the first inkling of TV fakery I had was a website put up by a fellow Baltimorean named Scott Lowry, L-O-U-G-H-R-E-Y. I don't even know if he's still alive. He was one of your typical sort of leftish community organizers, and he saw the Evan Fairbanks clip and posted a little thumbnail of it and a picture of it on his website, and he called us. It was the first, I think it was one of the very first. It was called 9/11 Hoax, 911-HOAX. And it had that Fairbanks clip of the, we called it, well, the Hezer Connie CNN clip, we called it Ghost Plane. But the Evan Fairbanks clip was, it was like, you could see the plane literally smoothly disappearing into this steel-reinforced concrete of the South Tower. Mm-hmm. And it was obvious it was a cartoon, a cheap, crappy digital cartoon.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, my gosh, this guy Scott Lowry's right here in Baltimore. I saw his website. I called him up. Yeah, this would have been about 2005. And we were convinced. We talked. He was really upbeat about this. He said, I got this clip from Rosalie Rosalie Grable is the one who's taken this apart and is saying that these videos were faked. But she thinks the Naudé footage shows a UAV hitting the North Tower. That would be the first hit. I think you're familiar with that footage, with the phony video that the Naudé brothers were doing. They were doing a documentary covering the New York City Fire Department. You know the whole background.
Yeah. My wife bought that DVD.
Right. Scott and I were convinced that this was going to blow the TV fakery wide. Now, remember, that's when we started calling ourselves, I started calling myself a no-planer, because I said, well, that makes it obvious. That makes it obvious. But Nico Halp said, no, that's not the term to use. We shouldn't use the meme no planes, because that's, you can't prove a negative. We should say TV fakery. Yeah.
Did you ever meet Nico?
Yes, I did. I went up to New York several times, and Nico was giving presentations at St. Mark's Church, which was the headquarters of the New York City 9/11 Truth Group. I got to say about Nico, I feel he did very valuable work in the beginning. He attended the NIST presentation to challenge them. But Nico had flaws. He was a chain smoker, and he liked to drink.
Right.
And he descended into alcoholism. What do you want me to say? Descended into sort of he was so frustrated and so outraged because the New York City 9/11 Truth Group wouldn't go with his obvious proof of TV fakery. I went up there for the sort of premiere presentation he made. It was very long, much longer than it should have been, to a crowd of about 100 people where he showed how they faked the images. It wasn't quite as detailed as what Simon Shack has done. And you know, Nico was getting very frustrated. At that point, there was a wealthy American named Jimmy Walters, I don't know if you even remember him. And he himself said, TV, no planes. There were no planes. This was TV fakery. And Jimmy Walter was subsequently driven out of the United States and basically went to Europe. Rick Siegel went to Spain. So I know you have a member of your group, very nice lady from
Switzerland.
Bern. Switzerland is, yeah. And she's always saying, well, this person must be an agent. That person must be an agent. I knew all these people. You know, Rosalie Grable stayed at my house. I'll tell you all about that. She was what I call an idiot savant. That's another.
I don't really know her very well, so I can't speak
Web
to her.
Web Fairy. Her website was called Web Fairy.
Yeah, but I don't know her. What is her contribution? What has she got to show?
She put up the site called Web Fairy that had all of these videos.
Okay.
And freeze frame them to show that the Hezer Connie CNN clip, so-called ghost plane, was fake, to show that the Ed Fairbanks clip was fake, other things. She had all kinds of stuff out there. Web Fairy. It was a fantastic website.
And it's gone now?
She died. So she got cancer, died a few years ago, and it hasn't been maintained.
Right.
Another great 9/11 truther. Fantastic 9/11 truth. Who your Swiss member has also raised suspicions, was called Killtown, and he created an archive of every available video of 9/11. I mean, a library, every available video of 9/11, and he did great work as well. We started in a Yahoo News group called 9/11 Inside Jobbers. I think Nico helped started that. And it is interesting to see how this broke down, because when Rosalie Grable stayed at my house in 2006, the plan was she came here. The anti-Iraq war demonstrations were happening down in D.C. In those days, we had anti-war demonstrations. Don't see them anymore. And I said, she was coming in from Chicago. She flew in, she took the train in from Chicago. I paid for her ticket. She stayed at my house for about a week.
Yeah.
We went down to D.C. and I carried a sign that said 9/11 was an inside job in these anti-war demonstrations, and nobody else here wanted to hear it.
I'm looking at a video now from the 9/11 ferry, and that exact sign you just mentioned is up. 9/11 was an inside job. Interesting.
Yeah, Alex Jones put it out as a bumper sticker, I think. And I wasn't a particularly big fan of Alex Jones, but you got to remember, in those days, there weren't many places to go. Bill Cooper.
Yeah.
Alex Jones. There
was she also the 9/11 fairy? Is that her YouTube channel?
No, she was called Web Fairy.
Yeah, I know, but I did a search for Web Fairy, and the 9/11 fairy has a YouTube channel. I think it's from 10 years
not
ago.
Not a YouTube channel. No, she had a whole website.
No,
whole
I understand.
A whole elaborate website. And the other one was Jim Scott. Oh, God, I wish I could remember all these people's names. Great truthers. Called 9/11 Foreknowledge, and that was a deconstruction of the Naudet video and that whole thing,
right?
Because they showed that showed clear evidence of foreknowledge by the FDNY and the Naudet brothers. Jim Scott, the other one I'm thinking of. He was a libertarian candidate down there in the Carolinas for a while. It'll come back to me. I knew all these people, and they were wonderful people. These early, but they got they became very bitter over time when Grable came to stay here. I immediately called Scott Lowry, and I said, Scott, Rosie Lee Grable's coming here. We're going down to D.C. Oh, also, that was where Morgan Reynolds and Judy Wood did their National Press Club present. That's why we went down there, actually.
Right.
Because, Judy Wood was going to do her directed energy weapon thing, which I think is bogus, but Morgan Reynolds went on Fox and said, TV fakery. Don't you remember this? Morgan Reynolds went on Fox and said the video we were shown on TV was fake. But nobody remembers that now, do they?
Let's see if it's there. Morgan Reynolds on Fox.
Yeah.
Morgan Reynolds on Fox TV. I don't know. Yeah, I listened to Morgan Reynolds quite a few times on Jim Fetzer's show.
I met all these people and hung out with them. And as I say, when Rosalie was staying here, I thought Scott would be really interested. I called him up because he had put up that 9/11 hoax site. And he said, you know something? He said, I'm over it. He said, I'm fed up. I just don't have it. I want to go out and play. He said, I'm into tennis. I want to play. I want to watch the U.S. Open or whatever he was watching that weekend. And I realized people were just getting burned out from this stuff. And I watched Nico Houff descend into alcoholism.
Right.
Now I watched this clown Michael Rupert throwing up, drunk at a 9/11 truth conference.
So do you think these people were real or counterintelligence pro, COINTELPRO? Were they there to leave? No, you think they were okay?
I think it's easy to compromise somebody. Mm-hmm. It's easy to profile somebody and compromise them and know what their weakness is.
Right.
And then perhaps that is used to compromise them and effectively turn them into pawns. And Scott Lowry saw that happen, and he said, I'm just done with it. He said, I can't. He said, I realize I'm wasting my life with this because nobody's listening. Nobody's looking and nobody's listening. Nobody wants to hear it. We're going nowhere with this. That was at the end of about maybe 2006, 2005. I guess it would be 2006. Remember that there was sort of a peak of 9/11 truth activity around 2005, 2006. It culminated with this march that Alex Jones had with a couple hundred people through New York City, where they all wore these black T-shirts that said 9/11 was an inside job, and they marched up and down New York City. Geraldo Rivera went out there to ridicule them. And from there, it was just all downhill. So, you know, if you see Nico Haupt acting like an asshole, you know, confronting Luke Rutkowski, who I do believe is an agent, there's not a doubt in my mind that Luke Rutkowski of We Are Change is an agent. He stole money from the local. Actually, yeah, he stole money from that 9/11 Truth Group originally in New York City, and then I think We Are Change, he helped to start We Are Change. Of course, I consider the, and you know, the Loose Change people came out with their video, Dylan Avery and Jason Burmes and all that crowd, and we knew that was a limited hangout. We knew that was bullshit. They wouldn't touch. They didn't want to be no-planers. Nobody wanted to be tagged as a no-planer in those days. And again, as I say, Nico was right strategically. We should never have said no planes. You can't prove a negative. We should have said TV fakery. It took long enough for Fetzer to come around to that. It really did.
And has he really come around is the question.
I don't know, because I listened to, you know, he did great work around Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
But to say nobody died at Sandy Hook is a problem, because, you know, there's a filmmaker up in Connecticut named William Shanley who's hooked up with Fetzer. And he's pointing to a number of suspicious deaths that have occurred subsequent to Sandy Hook that really look very suspicious. Maybe they're fake deaths. I don't know. And so my argument to these people would be, well, if you're going to say that witnesses have been killed, then who knows? There may have been one or two casualties from Sandy Hook to keep people's mouths shut, or to set an example, or to terrorize the rest of them.
But no children. No children as described.
No. That whole business with dragging them out at the Super Bowl. And after Robbie Parker. Robbie Parker, Dr. Wayne Carver. Dr. Wayne Carver apparently has shown up as, he's a ringer for this guy who was just appointed to be head of the CDC. Have you seen this?
I've seen it, but they're not. I don't think it's the same guy.
You don't think they look alike?
Yeah, lots of people look alike, but I'm not into this person's that person. I think, actually, he allegedly died, and I went to the memorial site, and I don't know.
What about Wayne L. Sexton, who claims to have George Floyd?
Oh, I know. That's another shot at... I posted that one. That's just another obvious play on words, play on name, insult. But let's get back to 9/11. So what is you've been in this a long time, since the beginning. You're a seasoned researcher, protester. What is your final conclusion about 9/11? Where does Lynn stand on that? Let's get to the, just boil it right down. What is your conclusion?
Here's what I say. 9/11 was a movie made for TV news.
Okay.
So in that sense, the John LeBond principle does hold, was a hoax, but what occurred at the Pentagon was high treason, high fucking treason. And, when I got home from work that night, I said, oh, my God, they allowed a hit on the Pentagon? They had a NORAD stand down? I said, Rumsfeld's going to resign.
So what do you think hit the Pentagon?
Oh, I don't know.
Or anything. Or do you think it was not just a controlled demolition?
Yeah, it could have been just a bomb. Yeah. Barbara Honecker is convinced it was just a bomb placed there.
Sure, of course.
Some people, it could have been a Tomahawk missile. What's the difference?
And was anyone in there, do you figure, or no?
No, I don't think anybody was killed there, no.
No, it was under construction, or was it not at that point?
Right.
Right.
I mean, I'm on your... look, this is all gets down to... it's like arguing about I think it was either you or Chris Kendall who made this point.
Mm-hmm.
When these events occur, trying to pick them apart is like trying to pick apart the details of a Hollywood movie.
Yes, that's true.
After a while, what's the point? Now, I have to say this about Hollywood movies. I'm old enough to remember the production of Ben-Hur in 1959, and we are told that someone actually died in the filming of the chariot race scene from that movie.
Stunts. I think stuntmen do die, for sure. Mm-hmm. Or people that try and do their own stunts.
Right. So I tell someone, well, 9/11 was a movie made for TV news, but, and they say, well, what about this? I say, well, that depends on how realistic they want to make the special effects.
Mm-hmm.
And if they have to, they will kill somebody for special effect.
Well, it can't happen.
But if they
not
don't,
deliberately.
They won't bother.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. When you've got
accidents happen, just like in war, lots of people are casualties of friendly fire and in a war situation where you are pretending or you are shooting at people somewhere far away, or there's bad airplane calls, or they call the wrong target and they drop a bomb on the wrong place, easily can have, especially at night.
Collateral damage, all that stuff. I had this argument with Chris Kendall, who insists that under the current law, Nobody in the media can be prosecuted for faking a Sandy Hook or something like that. And my reply, and I guess
the media, the media covers a hyper-realistic drill, so they're not doing the faking. The media is not doing the faking. Like I said, blaming the media is like blaming the road for a car crash.
They're going along with it, and they often fabricate. Come on, they run B-rolls. They've been caught running this business where they showed what was alleged to be an attack on a Syrian village, and it turned out it was footage from a fireworks show at a Kentucky military base. That was ABC News, I think.
Yeah.
Now, let's not let the media slide on this, but with respect to 9/11, we have high treason at the Pentagon. I don't care what John LeBron says about whether they used put a bomb there or whatever, whether they killed anybody or not. This was high treason. And when I got home that night and turned on the TV, C-SPAN, and because at that time, this is very interesting, they were in transition at that point, the retiring chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Hugh Shelton, had been replaced by Air Force General Richard Myers, who was the officer in command of the JCS on the morning of 9/11. And these two senators, senior senators, John Warner of Virginia and Carl Levin of Michigan, I said, oh, God, here it's really going to come down now. The heads are going to roll. Because after Pearl Harbor, they court-martialed Admiral Kimmel and Major General Short. They took the rap for Pearl Harbor. I thought, surely Rumsfeld's going to have to. I said, it's inexcusable and unthinkable to allow a big, fat Boeing commercial jet flying across several state lines, over airfields and everything else, to hit the Pentagon without NORAD scrambling. I'd seen that movie, that Steven Seagal movie, Executive Action, or you know, that actually is where they scramble jets, and what do? He climbs underneath the belly of the Boeing to get in there. Have you ever seen that movie? This narrative has been trotted out again and again. I said, someone's going to have to be held responsible for such an unthinkable failure of our air defenses. That's not a hoax. That's high treason. Whether it's faked or not, it's high treason. And mm-hmm. I was stunned because I watched these.
Did anyone get prosecuted?
Nobody.
Yeah, nobody.
Carl Levin and John Warner actually congratulated General Myers and Ralph Eberhardt, Major General Ralph Eberhardt, who I believe was commander of the Air Force, for the wonderful job they had done under such difficult circumstances, and confirmed Richard Myers as permanent commander of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. I couldn't believe it. I thought my head was going to explode. I said, Americans are not going to tolerate this. So I assert here and now, whether was 9/11 a hoax? Of course it was, but that doesn't mean that everyone in uniform, right on down to the enlisted people, didn't commit treason, if not, certainly not the day of 9/11. Of course, thousands of them were participating in, there were over 40 exercises and drills going on.
But how could they commit treason if there was nobody entering the airspace, if it was a simulation?
It doesn't matter. It doesn't, they hit on they allow the bombing of a wall of the Pentagon?
Mm-hmm.
That's treason. That's an attack on the most fortified military base on American soil. Someone has to be held accountable for that, whether it was a bomb or a missile or whatever it was. That is high treason. That's such a failure. It was either a failure or a deliberate failure. One way or another, somebody should have been cashiered, court-martialed. There should have been accountability. Look.
In the real world, that's what would have happened. But, of course, because it was a simulation...
I don't buy that because, as far as I'm concerned, anybody in uniform who didn't realize what happened that day or that week, they could figure it out within a few months. They
right.
knew. They knew. And they are traitors. And I say here and now, anybody who was in uniform on 9/11 has committed treason against their country. And that includes the senior staff at the Pentagon, officers, enlisted people, anyone in uniform committed treason against their country, and I hold them accountable for that. I don't care if it was a hoax or not. Now, as to the controlled demolitions in New York City, I hold the fire department and the filthy, corrupt cops responsible for that. They knew. Those first responders, when they went in there, they knew it was controlled demolition. They knew that. They plow through the rubble. They knew it wasn't fire. They knew about
building. Well, maybe they're all retired now, the ones that...
Probably, and keeping their pensions and everything else. They're corrupt. They're guilty of racketeering and corruption.
Who's going to try them, though? Who's going to try them, though? Because the...
It would take a political revolution to resolve this. But one way or another, I'm not going to soft pedal this. I'm not going to say, well, it was just another media hoax. Oh, no, this was high treason. And what happened at Sandy Hook, that was a crime, too. That's extortion and racketeering. Not to mention all the money involved, the corrupt real estate deals. The notion that because they're hoaxing us that somehow nobody can be prosecuted for this, that's bullshit. I will never buy that. I could draw up the indictments myself, and I'm not even an attorney. Mm-hmm. And I could argue before a jury and convict them easily. So I don't want to hear, it's just TV fakery. It's just a hoax. Let's laugh it off. Let's make fun of it. No, it's not funny to me.
So who's going to step forward and draw up the indictments?
Well,
who would dare?
We've got a sort of anarchist revolt taking place. Well, they call themselves communists, I suppose. We've already got cities in turmoil here in the United States.
Yeah.
We've got cops who won't show up at the scene now and take a knee. I don't know what's going on in the military. I have to tell you, there are many, many, being in the martial arts, I've rolled and boxed and kickboxed with cops and people in the military for the 20 years since 9/11, 19 years, however many years. And I make no bones about my views of it. I've never concealed it. But no one's going to get in the ring with me. I'll tell you that right now.
Mm-hmm.
No one is going to get in the ring with me because I'll knock their ass out. I will. I'm still that angry about it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Now you got something else to be angry, this whole corona thing. And we're coming up to the 1 hour mark, so I know we said we'd only do an hour, but we can keep talking if you want for a bit more. But
a bit more. That Corona 1984, as IPS calls it, is simply 9/11 on steroids.
Yeah, it's crazy, isn't
it?
And
I have never failed to point out to people since this thing started, hey, you guys, you had this coming starting the day after 9/11.
Yeah.
You all rolled over for 9/11. You showed it was an IQ test for America. And also an ethics test, an ethical test of what gangsters.
And they failed both tests, America did.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, they haven't failed the corona test yet because they wouldn't have introduced this race war narrative if the COVID-19 scandemic had not started to attenuate and wear off. So people are, I hate to use the term waking up, but people are seeing through it. They're seeing through it.
Mm-hmm.
And, if I see somebody wearing a mask, I go, real loud whenever I see
not
somebody
bad, not bad,
mask.
Lynn. Good sheep noise. Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm confrontational. I've nearly gotten into a few fights over this. There's always some asshole flag waver out there that thinks we walked on the moon or some bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't care. I just don't care. At 69, how many years have I got left?
Mm-hmm.
I'm retired now. I collect my Social Security. I get a little pension check from the telephone company that I worked 7 years for. Now it's called Verizon.
Right.
And I get a little pension check from CSX. I worked for them about 6 years. So I get by. My house was paid off. First thing I did was I paid off my house.
Right.
I have never paid a cent of interest on a credit card. How many Americans can claim that? Not one cent of interest on a credit card in 30 years. But nobody
very good.
Knows that.
So you're paid up. So who do you now that what do you think happened with Chris Kendall of Hoaxbusters? Because I think that's where I heard you the most. What do you think happened there? What's your thoughts?
What do Kay and Rochelle think? I want to know what they think.
Haven't got a hold of Kay. I've invited Kay to talk many times, and haven't heard from her. I wanted to talk to her because she did a show on Fakeologists, so I haven't heard from her. Rochelle is upset. I think she thinks it's the real deal. She came on the broadcast here for a little bit on an audio chat. I don't know if you're up to date on all the audio chats.
Yeah, I try never to miss one because, even if it's those drunken Aussies, it really burned me out at times, really, especially he's the one who went down to Columbia.
Rollo.
Yeah, Rollo, he really gets on my nerves. He doesn't need to get drunk before he calls in. If he wants to smoke a little weed, that's one thing, but he doesn't have to get drunk.
No, I know. I've told him no more drunk casts, so doesn't listen.
But why is Chris Sandel's family setting up a GoFundMe page for this?
Well, it's already come and gone. It's already come and gone, the GoFundMe, yeah.
Why was that necessary? And what would be the reason for that? I wouldn't do it. That'd be the last thing in the world I'd think of. If you know what I'm saying? I wouldn't start a GoFundMe
page. I absolutely agree with you. There was a major car crash in a city in Toronto area. And within 12 hours, now allegedly the mother and three beautiful young children were told died. Within 12 hours, a GoFundMe for the husband, who we don't really know what he did or what money he made, was set up. And they kept bumping up the goal. I haven't looked in the last 2 days, but the goal is at $50,000. I thought to myself, okay, I understand if the breadwinner dies and maybe he was irresponsible and didn't leave a proper insurance policy or will, but a husband who's most likely the breadwinner, that doesn't make any sense. So whenever I see GoFundMe, I just get triggered immediately.
Yeah.
So I agree with you there. It's very strange.
That's the first thing. When people ask me why, I say, well, or who, I say, well, follow the money.
Yeah.
It ain't no mystery. I said, follow the money. See who's making money off this. At the lower and mid-level of things, it's always the money. Now, at the top of the pyramid, well, that's ideologically driven, right? That's,
right.
You know, they've got those people have so much money. Like a Bill Gates, he has so much money. You can tell he just wants to rule the world. He doesn't
have
any money.
Yeah.
But certainly to look at the connections at the mid-level and at the low levels, it's because we live in a nation of prostitutes.
Mm-hmm.
And you can pay, I'm now convinced, you can pay anybody to fake anything or say anything if you've got enough money. And there are people, you know, it's like the people who all claim they saw the plane. Well, I saw the plane. Or, hey, I'll tell you, it's something interesting that happened to me.
Yeah. A little louder, Lynn. I think you backed away from the mic a bit.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. You're just a little low, but go ahead.
There's a nice tavern here in Columbia, Maryland called the Ale House.
Okay.
I was in there, it was wintertime, a little over a year ago, and apparently there had been a march for gun control in Washington, D.C., and they must have brought people up from Florida, you know, must have brought buses of people up for this gun control march. And demonstration, lobbying Congress, that kind of stuff. And there in the Ale House was this guy. He was about my age. And I stopped to talk to him because, like, very, very few people my age, he was skinny and in good shape. So I said, you know, we started talking to each other. He was about my age. And I said, well, you know, hey, you look like you work out. You're in good shape. I said, so what are you doing? He said, well, I'm from Boca Raton, Florida. I said, well, what are you doing up here in the wintertime? He said, oh, I'm here on this lobbying to Congress to pass gun control legislation after Sandy Hook. So I said, I stopped. I kicked back. I said, now how am I going to handle this? So I said, really? I said, well, I said, there's some very suspicious things about Sandy Hook, you know. And I brought up the name of Victoria Soto. And he immediately said, oh, yes. I knew Victoria Soto, and suddenly he realized what he'd said. Or he said something that indicated, yeah, he said he knew Victoria Soto. And then he realized how stupid that sounded, because he was from Boca Raton, Florida. How could he have known Victoria Soto? And then I realized, this guy didn't know one way or another whether Sandy Hook was real, and he didn't care. And he was willing to say anything at that moment. He was willing to say anything at that moment, and I became very silent. And I pulled back, leaned against the bar, and just looked at him. And he suddenly realized, he looked at me, and you could see it click. You could see it in his eyes that he'd said the wrong thing. Here he didn't expect me to know who Victoria Soto even was. He wouldn't have expected me to name, you know, Wayne Carver or any of the people involved at Sandy Hook, but I brought up Victoria Soto. What was she supposed to be, the principal or a teacher there? And he said, oh, yeah, I knew her, or I knew her family. And then he realized how stupid that sounded. And he got very embarrassed. I watched his face. And he said, well, I got to go. And he was gone. He was out of there. Why do I tell this story? It's like the people who claim they saw the plane on 9/11. I saw the plane on 9/11. Oh, I know somebody who's sick with the coronavirus. I know somebody who died from the coronavirus.
They all want to be involved.
They want to be part of the narrative. It's pathetic.
Right. Yeah.
It's pathetic. But that's Stalinism. They want to show their loyalty. It's gang loyalty. It's social engineering. The money, though, that's easy to track. The GoFundMe pages, that's easy to track. That takes you right to the principles involved. And as I say, you could call this a hoax or a media hoax all you want. That's extortion and racketeering and fraud, and that's prosecutable. So I don't want to hear anybody say, oh, we could never – Chris Kendall used to tell me this. Well, you know, you could never prosecute anybody for this stuff. I don't buy that, not for an instant. No, under current circumstances, in this kind of mobbed-up, racketeered society, granted, we don't have the muscle to do it. But if we had the muscle to do it, I could line up 1,000 lawyers that could have them locked up overnight. You understand? I could do it if we had the muscle. It'd be easy to prove, and we know that. We know that. We have evidence against all of these people. There's plenty of evidence. We don't need to go out looking for more evidence. What we need is the political muscle. Will that ever happen? I don't know. I don't expect to live to see
it. I think people are a lot weaker now than they were, say, back in the day when you were coming up, because you've been here a while on this earth. So I don't think
you're right. They could start a war tomorrow, and nobody will be in the streets over it.
Yeah, exactly.
They could bomb the hell out of Syria, and I don't think you'd get a dozen people. You might be able to get Medea Benjamin and Code Pink to run around and dance down in front on the mall.
Where do you think we're going to be? If you could speak to someone in 2050, because I'm listening to some of Marcus Allen's old audios from 12 years ago, and it's fun to hear what he had to say and then hear some of his guests and see what the guests are doing now compared to what they said. So if you could talk to 2050, someone listening to this 2050, what would you say to them at this pivotal year of 2020? What would you say from the past if, say, you weren't around in 2050, 30 years from now?
Well, the main reason I stay healthy and stay alive is because I'm old enough to bear witness, and I have a long memory for the details. And so I am always talking to young people, always, and telling them this is not your fault. I really do. I can't stand my generation, the baby boomers. I can't stand them. They make me sick. They really do. Of course, most of them are halfway senile now or obese or, you know, they're a worthless generation. They betrayed their destiny. They did. Mm-hmm. At the moment when they should have stood up and they could have had their revolution right then and there. But they all turned around and walked away because Nixon ended the military draft. And so that, you know, the college kids didn't care anymore. I'm here to bear witness and to testify to this. I believe that by 2050, everybody will know this was bull. Everybody will know that they'll laugh at things like, look, people are already laughing at the Apollo moonwalks. Mm-hmm. That may be bigger. I think that's bigger than 9/11. I think that's bigger. You know, if someone says, well, do you think this virus is real? I'll say, well, do you believe we walked on the moon? And they'll stop and kind of I don't know. Of course, at this Brazilian, at this MMA place, I work out at. Eddie Bravo, he's a big celebrity up there. And Eddie Bravo, I don't know if you're familiar with him. I mean, he has had a network of Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu schools. Of course, a lot of his friends are probably out of work now, and he says they're going to turn to a life of crime. He asked David Icke about this. There is a podcast called The Tinfoil Hat.
Right, I started listening to that a bit.
Well, I pointed this out to Tim Osman. David Icke was on that podcast as a guest. And Eddie Bravo, in his very kind of polite manner, said, so what do you think about Apollo 11 and the moonwalks? And David Icke said, I couldn't believe this. I nearly fell out of my chair. Oh, I haven't really looked at that.
Oh, that's bullshit.
I don't know. I haven't. Right. Right, and to me, not that I would take David Icke all that seriously anyway.
So more proof of controlled opposition.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. That's how to me, everybody sees. See, what am I going to tell people? What I have to explain to people is nothing intellectual, but only ethical. Why did they're going to say, why did people go along with this? Because they're all going to see through it. You know, the new generation, the millennials, they grew up with digital graphics and all that. They can look at that Apollo stuff, and they can see right through it, a lot of them. And, you know, if I go over to the gym and I say, you know, somehow Eddie Bravo comes up, and they say, well, what do you think of his views on... I'll say, like I said, do you think the COVID virus is real? I'll say, well, do you believe we walked on the moon? And they'll shake their head, no, not really. But if they do, if they say, well, I don't know, I say, well, if you believe we walked on the moon, you'll believe anything.
That's right.
And the best video to show people on that, I post it all the time, is that news clip of President Richard Nixon on the phone talking to the moon. That's all you need to do is show that to people. Have you've seen that, right?
I'm going to look it up. It's Richard Nixon. Yeah.
Richard Nixon talking to the moon, to Buzz Aldrin and Neil Armstrong on the moon. Everybody knows what a liar Nixon was, how he made
the
stuff
first
up.
Phone call.
Neil and Buzz, the President of the United States is in his office now and would like to say a few words to you. Over.
That would be an honor.
All right, go ahead, Mr. President. This is Houston out.
Hello, Neil and Buzz. I'm talking to you by telephone from the Oval Room at the White House. And this certainly has to be the most historic telephone call ever made. I just can't tell you how proud we all are of what you... For every American, this has to be the proudest day of our lives. And for people all over the world, I am sure they, too, join with America in recognizing what an immense feat this is. Because of what you have done, the heavens have become a part of man's world. And as you talk to us from the Sea of Tranquility, it inspires us to redouble our efforts to bring peace and tranquility to Earth. For one priceless moment in the whole history of man, all the people on this earth are truly one. One in their pride in what you have done. And one in our prayers that you will return safely to Earth.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a great honor and privilege for us to be here representing not only the United States, but man of peace of all nations, man with interest and a curiosity, and man with a vision for the future.
And thank you very much, and I look forward, all of us look forward to seeing you on the Hornet on Thursday.
Look forward to that very much, sir.
Did you hear that okay, Lynn?
Oh, beautiful. And
listen to this follow-up. This is a far more chilling audio. Listen to this.
All three Apollo 11 astronauts also resigned shortly after their return. On the 25th anniversary of the event in 1994, Neil Armstrong made a rare public appearance and held back tears as he spoke these brief cryptic remarks before the next generation of taxpayers as they toured the White House.
Today we have with us a group of students among America's best. To you, we say, we have only completed a beginning. We leave you much that is undone. There are great ideas undiscovered, breakthroughs available to those who can remove one of truth's protective layers.
Yeah, well, you know what? I think he was contrite at the end because I think he was just he knew that most people knew he's lying his ass off.
Right, right. And so the question for us will be this: nobody was fooled; they only pretended to be fooled.
Right.
How is that so difficult to understand? Study the German Democratic Republic. Study the Soviet Union. Right? And what do they used to say in the Soviet Union? Workers used to say, well, they pretend to pay us and we pretend to work.
Right. That's good.
That's what happens in a totalitarian society. Everybody pretends.
Yeah.
Out of loyalty. So that's people looking back at this, that's how they'll understand it. They'll understand it as a prostituted society. And that's the tragedy. That's it. And I will never accept. I will never accept from anybody the claim that I was fooled or I just didn't know any better. I was innocent. No, I'll never buy that. Someone would have to be really stupid for me to believe that, and I just don't buy it. Everybody goes along to get along. They pretend to go along with this stuff, and it's corrupted, it's rotten. And I'm here to testify to their children and their grandchildren. When they ask, you know, how did we end up like this? Why are we slaves? How did all this happen? How did we lose our freedom?
Mm-hmm.
I'm there to testify. To testify to the moral and ethical corruption, the failure, the moral cowardice. You know, there's a difference between moral cowardice and physical cowardice, or moral courage versus physical courage. You could take a 17-year-old, put him in a uniform, give him a rifle, and send him out to the front. And the peer pressure of his comrades, now he could be crapping his pants in fear, but the peer pressure not to look like a coward will enable him to perform. But that's a lot different from being at something like the My Lai Massacre, where you're watching your fellow soldiers murder unarmed peasants, and only one individual, a helicopter pilot, threatens to shoot his own buddies if they don't stop the massacre. That's moral courage.
Mm-hmm.
The ability to stand against the peer pressure of the group, to stand alone. That's very, very different from physical courage, moral courage. As moral cowardice is much, much, much more devastating to a society than physical cowardice. And on that note, I should probably depart.
So you and I have the moral courage to at least speak about these things. I mean, we're not shooting any soldiers, shooting at civilians, but we are at least speaking of these things, which is hard to believe is courageous. Mm-hmm.
You've got kids, right?
I have children.
Right, so you're going to have to explain this to them.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you are already.
I'm trying my best.
Yeah, they're going to say, Dad, you know, everybody at school says you're crazy and you're a tinfoil hat conspiracy theorist. And you have to say, well, they're afraid.
Yeah.
They're afraid. Not they don't know any better. Not they're fooled. Not, well, you should look at this, you should look at that. Say, no, everybody lies because they're afraid. They lack the moral courage to stand against the crowd.
Yeah, and sometimes I think I'm just doing it because I like to be a contrarian. But in actual fact, no, it's obvious to me. I believe I'm a thinking person. I can weigh the one side and the other, and I say for sure that 9/11, JFK, the moon landing, viruses, pandemics, epidemics, they're all part of a larger money-driven lie system. And that's the number one motivating factor, money and control and power, those three things in different orders for different people at different levels. But to me, it's obvious. I'm a thinking person. I can see through this as easy as anyone should be able to. I think it's quite easy. I don't think I'm any more advanced than anybody else. And when I hear the stories, the conflicts in the stories, the parts that don't make sense, the only thing that makes sense is their lies, because lies often trip themselves up all the time with conflicting narratives from the liars themselves. So.
Your site, fakeologist.com, that whole complex you put there, it's magnificent.
Thank you very much.
It's just a really super valuable resource. I'm constantly sending people to it, referring them to your blog. And
well, thank you,
else.
Lynn.
And you know, it's a treasure. And
well, thank you. Well, I hope you, I don't know if you're registered on the site, but anything you want to post, I know you're on Facebook, and you know, you can only put your energy into so many places before it's exhausted, but if you want to put some of your stuff on my Fakeologist forums, which requires its own registration, fakeologist.com blog for commenting, they're all unrelated sites in the sense the software doesn't integrate. And of course, I've set up FakeoTube, which I'm trying to catch the YouTube type crowd, where I put up the YouTube videos that tend to disappear that I think are valuable.
Yeah, that's a great resource, FakeoTube. I like the old fashioned forum. you've got there. Do people still use the forum much?
Well, it's pretty quiet. I think the problem with Discord is it's so easy to just plop in your comment, your link, without doing very much. It's just a one shot, one click. The people love it for its simplicity, but I don't like it that it scrolls away and it just goes into the ether within a short order. So if people could put their more permanent research on the forums, and I've created a PHPBB forum as well as the original forum was on WordPress, which is a little more clumsy. So if you want to register, Lynn, at Fakeologist Forums 2, the links are on the main site, fakeologist.com/blog, and put some of your research there. I'd be grateful because you have great wisdom. You've been doing this a long time. You know what you're talking about. And if you want to just flip some of your Facebook, because I'm not really on Facebook, as you can see. I just have my pseudonym on there. I was locked out of my own account as Avarado. So I just don't like other people controlling me. So if you want to put your information on the forums where it's a little more accessible to anyone, there's no registration unless you're a poster, feel free to do that. And that would be great.
I'm just a student. I'm just a conscientious student. You guys are my teachers.
Not really. No. I'm just a collator. I'm not teaching anybody. But I appreciate the compliment. But, yeah, if you could get on there. I know you said you were in computers, so maybe try and get Discord in a browser. Discord can run in a browser. That definitely is something they highlighted in the last bulletin from their site last week. So they can work in a browser. So if you have a browser for Facebook, you can have a browser window for Discord. And you can put some of your stuff in there as well. But I prefer it was on the forum. So, yeah, anything.
Yeah,
I
like the forum layout better. As you say, it's more permanent. So
It is more permanent. Yeah, so definitely go on there and register, and I'll just verify you right away. And I'll keep looking at your Facebook feed, which is one of the only reasons I go on Facebook. There's not very many people that I follow. But I like what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. There's some very valuable stuff out there on Facebook. There's a lot happening on Facebook. There really is, especially around this COVID-19 thing.
And being censored? It's not being cleared off right away?
Well, I think what Facebook does is it puts warnings out there. You know, Facebook's fact checker labels these things and tries to smear them. But
okay. There's
a surprising amount of material out there on Facebook videos being posted and everything else, you know. Things have changed. There really are resources out there. I have a more positive view of this than I think many of your members.
Okay. So you think...
These guys have overplayed their hand on this COVID-19. I kind of agree with Marcus Allen on this, that they jumped the gun on this. They've been another year or two at least, should have been preparing for this COVID-19. Somebody pulled the trigger on this prematurely, in my opinion. It might have to do with Trump. And, you know, that they're sick of him and they want to get him out of there, and so they need to direct the economy real quick.
Mm-hmm.
There may have been other motives, but I think, you know, in the art of war, there are three things, or four, really. There's preemption, right? That's when you strike first, element of surprise. There's dislocation, which is where you pick the terrain or the weather to give yourself an advantage. And there's disruption, where actually drop in troops behind enemy lines and disrupt from. And then there's exploitation, which is when you seize the city or seize the enemy camp and then you sack it, or you get extra ammunition and all that.
Uh-huh.
A preemption always has its risks, because if you preempt prematurely, you risk of exposing your whole strategy. And that's what I think has happened with this COVID-19 thing. They jumped the gun on this. They moved ahead on it much too quickly, and I believe it's exposed them to millions of people who otherwise wouldn't have thought twice about it.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
That's, you know, maybe I'm being, you know, sort of, how do I put it, overly optimistic about that. Run that by Marcus, and I think he would agree with me on that, that it's what they've done is they've really preempted themselves
okay.
a little bit too quickly.
Well, they're not stopping, that's for sure. It's the
well,
narrative.
Now,
yeah.
They're going to double down. They're going to double down on this. Will there be a second wave? Well, the plan itself, says that the second wave will be an actual biological warfare attack. Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, that's what I'm hearing. Plandemic 2. Bill Gates, by the way, Bill Gates, where are you? We miss you. You've been front and center of the media every day. I think maybe he's gone into hiding a little bit, or he realized, or his handlers realized he was overexposed, and I think he was probably potentially in physical danger if he wasn't careful, or at least I'm not saying there were direct threats, but my God, I think people have identified him as the enemy within quite quickly. I think I don't know what you can do to spin the narrative to make him look positive, because
our strategy on this should be crystal clear.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is going to try, they're going to try to blame the Chinese for this COVID thing. Well, you know, look, Trump has one of two options. Either call it out as a hoax, he's got to do that, or say that it was a biological weapon and the Chinese, through either their incompetence or deliberately, unleashed this. If he says that, then people should turn around and say, well, it was Fauci who set up the lab in Wuhan. According to
CDC, definitely CDC, yeah.
Yeah. So if Trump is serious about going after the Chinese, he's going to have to get rid of the traitors, which is to say the business partners of the Chinese, which is Fauci,
yeah,
CDC, National Institute of Health. You know, make him follow through on it, push him. I don't have any illusions about Trump.
Do you think obviously Trump is really on our side, or he's on the good side?
No.
Or
no? No, of course not. Of course
no,
not.
I know.
He's an actor. He's a stooge. No president has any real power.
Yeah.
They're frontmen, but that doesn't mean that they can't be sort of pressured from below. Remember, he's got a movement behind him. They have generated a movement, and that's what I identify with. And if you look at who Trump's supporters are, well, they're the people in the United States who are well-armed. Mm-hmm. Another thing parenthetically about this, after these riots, gun control is off the table forever. I mean, David Hogg and what's her name, Emma?
Yeah.
Whatever her name, you know. Yeah,
Emma Gonzalez. They've gone quiet.
Yeah, yeah.
They've gone dark, huh?
they can take gun control and forget all about that, because everybody's going to be arming up now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, there again, that shows you where preemption, you know, you can overreach. You can outdo yourself. You can be a little bit too quick on the trigger.
Yeah.
And that's what they've done here. They've exposed themselves decisively in that respect. It's up to people like us to take advantage of that, to take advantage of that and push through, carry things to their logical conclusion. Well, if COVID-19 is a hoax, what else is a hoax? I had this argument with Chris Kendall.
Mm-hmm.
When Trump came out with the fake news meme,
right?
I said, this is important. I said, it's true. And Chris was saying, well, no, by fake news, he just means that everybody but Fox News is fake news. Well, yeah, I know that's what he means, but that's not the point. The fact that that meme was thrown out there opens the door to calling into question the entire media.
Yeah.
And something like Apollo 11. Everything. It ties it all together. And we should be cynical about his motives, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't exploit the hell out of it.
Yeah. Well, I thought it kind of devalued my fakeologist site, because he just basically watered it right down, because people that dismiss Trump can dismiss the concept of fakeology altogether, because it comes out of his mouth. So,
not if they make it over to fakeologist.com or FakoTube. I mean, come on. The people are going to go looking. They're going to go out there looking for this stuff.
Yes.
I think there's more people looking at your material and comparable material than ever before. If you're looking for a majority, no, it's never a majority. Most people are hiding in their basements when this shit really comes down.
Yeah.
You know, it's like less than 5% of a population to overturn a government, really, maybe 3%.
Right.
And even now in these high-tech times, it's the quality and the demographic quality of your movement that's going to be decisive. So, you know, the way I rate it, I say, 100 high school students equals maybe 20 soccer moms equals one military officer. I mean, you know, it's demographic quality of the people who are tuning into you that matters here, not the quantity, not the numbers. I always hate it when people talk about, well, I've got so many subscriptions on YouTube, or look at my audience, or, PewDiePie has so many million followers. But no, it's not the numbers. Those people are shallow. That's not the point. It's the quality of the demographic and the demographic spread that makes the difference.
Right. Yeah.
That's what affects history. That's what can move mountains.
Excellent.
So maybe I'm starry-eyed about it.
All right, Lynn. Well, thank you very much. I posted the link to the forums on your Facebook page. I put a link to your Facebook page in my show notes. So we will be talking to you again, I hope. I don't do regular shows like Tim Osman. I just don't have the time. But I'm trying to show up Sundays for an hour or so talking to an interesting person like yourself and trying to just become a regular, just do a regular broadcast that people can listen to. I don't really have too many live listeners right now, but my whole point that I made to the Hoax Syndicate Network is that people don't listen live. They listen later. They let their computers,
absolutely,
their phones do all the downloading, and then in the morning they can just listen and pause or listen at their leisure. So to be live is not relevant in this infinite media universe anymore. People don't even watch TV live for the most part anymore. It's all binge watching and streaming at their leisure, at their phone, at their tablet or whatever it is. So hopefully we'll get lots of downloads on this show, and we'll talk to you again, I'm sure.
Yeah, I have very warm feelings toward Canadians because I go back to the Vietnam War, and I actually knew some young men who, to evade the draft, they went to Canada and established new lives for themselves. And Canada was kind of, I guess, it wasn't Justin Trudeau then. Well, maybe it was Pierre Trudeau. I don't know. But
yeah, he was in 1968. So, yeah, perhaps. Right. Trudeau.
You know, as I say, and I noted, for example, that when the 9/11 Truth Movement started, there were a disproportionate number of Canadians and Australians and even Europeans who came to our support long before Americans started, you know, cluing into the thing. And I have, as a consequence, I kind of have very warm feelings towards Canadians and Australians. But maybe
that's nice.
Like, I don't know.
Well, I'd come down. Actually, one of the trips I wanted to make last year was to come down to your neck of the woods and see the Masonic town of Washington, D.C.
I should tell you about that.
Go ahead.
The one, you know, they're overturning statues all over the place, these old Confederate statues.
Right. Albert Pike was he tossed from the Grand Lodge there?
I hear that the D.C. cops especially came out to protect the Albert Pike statue.
Ah, good Masons.
We should follow up on that.
The good Masons,
That's what I've heard, very. And that's another motive for these filthy, dirty, corrupt cops. People say, oh, defund the police. Why stop with defunding police? Let's defund the military. That's racist, too. Let's defund the government. Let's defund all of it. Now, I know, that sounds reckless and irresponsible to create such a vacuum at this point. I'm 69. I'm not willing to wait, really.
It's now or never, I guess. Well, I got mixed feelings on the whole defund. I think all institutions are corrupt by design because they have people in them. People are corrupt at a moment's notice. So just because you break up one organization, it does take time for corruption to set in. So if you started a new organization, it takes people time to align and have alliances, just like that crappy television show Survivor. You see alliances, and that, I guess, alliances by definition are a form of corruption. So
you compromise your principles. If we defunded the police, what would that mean? Do they bring in UN blue helmets?
Exactly. Police? Yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm. Well, then let's get it. You know, why postpone things? Really, why stall? Why put, let's bring on the worst? As you know, I suppose I'm making the Ted Kaczynski argument here that when it comes to technocracy, the longer you put things off, the worse it's going to get. The sooner you pull the plug, things will be bad, but at least everything will be out in the open.
Mm-hmm.
People will see they have no choice. Now, I know that's kind of a risky thing to say.
Well, it seems like that's what they're doing now. It really has that feeling to it. Mm-hmm.
They're playing a very dangerous game, but it's like poker. If they're going to double down, then we should up the ante.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's my... Now, I know that might be reckless and irresponsible. I don't have kids to look out for, so it's not... You know, I have two nephews, and
right,
they're in my will and all that, but
Well, that's nice.
I want to see I want to see something happen already. I want to see something decisive happen already. I'm kind of tired of it all.
Well, yeah, you're running out of time to see the big show, so let's maybe it'll come sooner rather than later. All right, thank you so much, Lynn. I'm going to process this file and then go to bed. It's been
a lot. So everybody out there, take care of your health. That's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Maintain your health and that of your family.
Absolutely. That's all you have, and you can hardly pay for it if you lose it. So I agree. I missed my walk tonight for this call, but I can't do everything, so I'll double down tomorrow.
Yeah, me, I got to jog in, and I did about a 10-minute heavy bag workout, pounding the crap out of that thing, which makes me feel better.
Oh, good. Yeah, well, you're probably more fit than I am, but that's great. Okay, Lynn, thanks. We'll be in touch. We'll have another session maybe in a few weeks. Maybe we can reconvene and talk about COVID and what's going on with the masking. I mean, we could talk forever on the nonsense.
And a shout out to Tim Osmond of IPS. He's done great work, I think.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I've been posting his stuff regularly. Definitely. Excellent work. I just love the way he reads the news. And
I know we have our disagreements with him, but, you know, hey, there's room for disagreement in this movement.
Yeah, the mic, the Rocket Man mic, how that was more realistic than, say, Super Dave Osborne. I'm not sure where he was going there, but I can.
Yeah.
He hasn't said a word about it since, so I'm okay. There's too much else to talk about to wonder why. So, exactly. All right, Lynn, I'll sign off, and we'll play that intro song by Media Bear, Something Strange is Contacting Me, the Contact Tracers. Have a good
Always
one.
Always love your musical selection. Take care.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Lynn. There goes Lynn Ertel. She's on Facebook, and she's really quite the dynamo in the martial arts world, and she's posts fantastic stuff on Facebook, and hopefully I put a link to Fakeologist Forums, too, and hopefully she can go there and do some posting. All right, take care.
Oh, no!
The Democrat proposed bill, H.R. 6666.
That means the full power and strength of the military.
I'm just an average man with an average life. Put on my mask to drive. Hell, I'm just being nice. They won't leave me alone, even in my safe space home. Voice at my door says, you're in the COVID zone, and the contact tracers, they're always watching me. Goodbye to privacy. Oh no, and now our neighbors act like the KGB. Not very neighborly. I watch the news at night and lock my door with fright. People in a van I'm trying to avoid. Am I under surveillance or am I just paranoid? In the parking lot frightened, I'm afraid to go in there. They might interrogate me or want samples of my hair. Apps that are tracking me installed on my phone. Vaccinate and chip me and send me back home. That's why I just don't want them injecting me. Psychotic pharmacy. Oh no, I won't comply with Nancy Pelosi. Total hypocrisy.
A new study finds Democrat officials may be using so-called contact tracing to affect the outcome of this year's elections.
Oh no.
An army of contact tracing to stalk citizens,
track down people,
search their homes.
It is for the public good.
Express privacy concerns tied to the data collected. Health officials say it's necessary.
They think we're invading your privacy, which in this case we do.
We are watching.
Track down those who've been in recent contact with a person who's become infected.
We are watching.
I don't want to go anywhere. The purge is happening. Is that tower microwaving me?
Contact tracers than before.
Oh no!